us begin.
Okay.
Here we go. Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. Commencement at Michigan State University coming up this weekend, and Mary Robinson, Ireland's first female president, will be addressing students. It's likely to be a typical optimistic address, one that my next guest says may miss some key points. Charlie Whelan is a senior lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy, part of the University of Chicago, and the author of the upcoming book, 10 and a Half Things No Commencement Speaker Has Ever Said, that is coming out on May 7th. Charlie, thanks for joining us this evening.
Good to be with you.
Now, your piece in the Wall Street Journal today, which is the most popular article on the site, gives us a glimpse of the kinds of things a speaker should but probably won't be telling students, one of which is that the social life you develop may mean some, which you know is usually unproductive time in college. It may actually be time well spent. Oh, how so?
Well, the point explicitly, number one, was your time spent in fraternity basements was not wasted. And by that, I use fraternity basements as a metaphor for other activities, but mostly non-academic kinds of things. And people, those are things that people feel guilty about when they look back at their college experience. Boy, if only I hadn't been doing that, I could have been studying more, my grades would have been higher, and so on. Well, in fact, I've spent most of my time since graduation working on public policy, and one of the things we're studying in public policy is the happiness research. What we now know is that it's your connection with other human beings that has the most profound impact on your happiness and well-being. So, in fact, those activities that established bonds, even if they weren't in the classroom, are probably the things that are most likely to have the most impact on your overall life.
Another thing you say that speakers will not be talking about is the scary truth that for many graduates, they are now about to face some of their worst days. Maybe now more than ever, since so many young people are unemployed. What is it that they are about to experience?
Well, it's going to be different for different people, but I want them to be aware when it happens to them. This book was based on a speech that I gave to Dartmouth graduates a year ago. I had been a Dartmouth alum, so I'd sat where they were sitting. When I went to do that speech, I thought, okay, what do I wish that somebody had told me? What nobody told me was, look, if you want to be a writer, and I do want to be a writer, you're going to have some tough times between now and then. So a year later, I was actually unemployed, had no money, had no job, and was living in a spare bedroom of a retired couple's house. So I want people to realize that the more significant your goals, the harder you're going to have to slog away, and invariably, you're going to hit some rough patches.
You say another word of wisdom to tell graduates is that they should marry someone smarter than themselves, or maybe at least someone as employable as they are. What do you think that students should keep in mind when it comes to that that decision?
Well, this is interesting. So the book is very serious in its advice, but it also has moments of humor as well. So when I introduced that one, there are two points. The serious point is, look, we've got a lot of research showing that there are profound economic benefits to having a life partner, someone you marry, who is another economic oar in the water. So, and I again use my own life experience. My wife is also a Dartmouth grad, and when I was getting a PhD, she was running a software company. When she wanted to start her own business, I had a job. So that we were able to kind of tag team as we went along, and I think that's really important. People won't think about the fact that you're choosing a life partner who's going to have a major impact on the trajectory of not just your emotional life, but also your career. But then I also said, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that, hey, if your commencement's coming up, this is the only time in your life when the people who are Phi Beta Kappa are wearing ribbons on their gowns, and the people who are summa cum laude have their names in the program. So this is your chance to go out and find that smart person. When you walk into a bar or a health club a year from now, the smart people are not going to have their names listed in the program.
Now, are there two kinds of students, though, those that have family resources that allow them to take some time off to reflect, maybe travel around and find their footing, and those that really don't have anything like that and do need to hit the ground running? Should both types maybe consider their future differently?
Perhaps, but one of the points I make in the book is to take time off, and this is addressed to people at every stage of the life cycle. I do draw on the fact that Bill Gates used to always go off into the woods and take a week's respite to kind of reflect on the future of the business. And if Bill Gates can take time away, then from his busy job, you probably can too. But you raise a very good point about the fact that people are graduating with staggering amounts of debt, and not everybody can afford to do that. But in the book, I do offer the example of both my wife and I, who after graduating went around the world. We traveled for 9 months. My family was relatively comfortable, not rich, but relatively comfortable, so I was not saddled with huge debt. But my wife's family, her father died when she was very young, and she'd actually been on what we would now know as AFDC or welfare when she was younger. So she did not graduate with extraordinary wealth. And she was still able to do it because, most important, we worked from about June to October to raise all the cash for the trip. She prepaid her student loans and then took off. So I think that is an important lesson, that if you start out with the assumption that you can't do it, I'm not sure that's always the case. Obviously, it's easier for some people than others. And even if you got a lot of family wealth, I still think you should pay for it yourself.
I'm talking to Charlie Whelan, a senior lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy, part of the University of Chicago. His upcoming book, which is coming out May 7th, 10 and a half things no commencement speaker has ever said. Now, Charlie, you do put the hammer down on the parents, something that's likely to cause an uproar. You tell students that their parents don't want what's best for them. That might be baffling to some. What do you mean?
Well, it becomes less baffling when you read the first sentence of the section, which is they want what's good for you, and it's not always the same. This is something I had wrestled with for years and years. My parents are lovely, supportive people, and yet as I reflect on my 20s, they objected to nearly every important decision that I made. They did not want me to be a writer. They did not want me to get a PhD. They did not want me to go around the world. Those three things probably collectively are the most important decisions that I made. So I've been thinking about this for a long time. And what I've come up with is especially now that I am a parent myself, is that any parent wants to protect their child from the most extreme downside outcome. So if you want to be a writer or an actor, boy, the chances are that's not going to work out. But if you want to be a lawyer, I know you're probably going to be okay. It may not be your first choice, but it's a safe choice. And so I think the tension there among families that are quite intact and supportive and so on is that the parents want to protect their kids. The kids want to go for broke, and that's always going to be a point of contention.
Finally, you say something that might draw a gasp from any graduating audience, which is don't try to be great. Was that a typo, or is there a good reason to avoid shooting for the stars?
I'm not encouraging sloth and other negative attributes like that. That advice actually comes, you'll recognize this from the business you're in, from a television talk show host in Chicago who does a live program. And as you know, people tense up before you put them on the mic or on the camera. And so 30 seconds before airtime, he leaned across the desk to me and he said, "Don't try to be great. Just try to be solid." And the impact of that is that it immediately relaxes you, because great involves things that are out of your control, luck and other turns of events that you may not be able to directly affect, whereas being solid is something that most people have control over. And the irony is, as soon as you focus mostly on just being solid, then you become kind of relaxed, you take more risks, and you're more likely in the end to be great anyway. And if you're not great, there's nothing wrong with being solid.
Since you work in academia, tell me, what do you think of this new generation coming out of college right now with all their technological tools? Are they somehow better off than those of us that preceded them?
I think they have the same basic emotional wants and needs that we had. They're facing probably a tougher job market. And yes, they've got the gee whiz technology, so they can find their friends on Facebook immediately and so on. But at the end of the day, they're asking the same questions that I asked, the same questions that my parents asked, which is, what am I about? What do I love to do? Where do I want to go in life? And those are kind of timeless questions. So they're very different in certain respects, but some of those respects are quite superficial. I think underlying, they look a lot like graduates have for a long time.
In terms of their ability to interconnect now, their constant connections with Facebook, do you think that they have an advantage in terms of networking with each other and finding jobs, or not necessarily so?
I think it's a great tool, but I think you have to be a little careful. At the end of the day, it's about a human connection. And Facebook and Twitter and those other tools are like an accelerant. If you've got a great relationship to start with, friends from college, great work colleagues, then having this added social media tool can be very powerful. It's easier to reach them, easier to stay in touch and so on. But it can't substitute for that original relationship. So there, you can't create real friendships using this technology. You can only make those real friendships that were built somewhere else stronger and more durable.
When you see these students that are about to leave the nest of the university, what do you typically view as their biggest mistake that they make in the year or two right after college?
I see students who are in an extraordinary rush without having thought what direction they happen to be running in. So this group in particular, this generation, has had a very competitive upbringing. And in fact, one of the points in the book is, you know, should we consider stopping the Little League arms race to see, you know, what happened to playing baseball for fun? So I think everything these folks do is with abandon and a traveling team and this and that. And so graduation comes, and I think it's time to just start running in some direction. The difference is after graduation, it's not entirely clear where the path should go. Prior to that point, if you stay on the same path as everybody else and move a little bit faster, you're going to be fine. Most people are going to high school, then they're going to college, they're trying to get better grades. But then they're presented with graduation where the choices are literally infinite. And I think if you just start running without giving enough attention to where you want to go, you're going to end up perhaps in a blind alley.
Finally, you say that there are 10 and a half things no commencement speaker has ever said. What is that half thing?
There are a couple halves actually embedded within, but they total the 10 and a half. One of them is to read obituaries, because they're just like biographies, only shorter. And if you're interested in what you should do with your own life and your own searching questions, then I think it helps to look at the way other people have lived their lives. You can read biographies, that's a great tool, but I think obituaries are easier, faster, more diverse groups of people, and they tell you a little bit about living as well.
Charlie Whelan, senior lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy, part of the University of Chicago. His book comes out May 7th, titled 10 and a Half Things No Commencement Speaker Has Ever Said. Unfortunately, many commencement speakers will have not read the book before their own speeches, Charlie, but interesting stuff. Thanks for joining us this evening.
That was my pleasure.
And we're coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen, and you are listening to 1320 WILS.